From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour is made in a building that houses police motorcycles. You might have passed it without knowing much about it. I'm going to read from the story filed by my colleague Gino Finelli. Quote, a modest rectangular building sits at the northern end of Maplewood Park, a two-mile stretch of meandering trails and green space along the western banks of the Genesee River. At present, it is marked with a sign that reads Maplewood Training Center, although it has had past lives as a recreation center and a police station. In fact, the building still houses police motorcycles. But the city has set in motion a $5.5 million plan to breathe new life into Maplewood Park and that building. As part of that project, the easy-to-miss structure will become the Maplewood Nature Center, which the city intends to be an entry point to the park and a community gathering space, end quote. Now, Gino's piece I just read from was 2 years old now. And now it's a chance to learn a lot more about the timeline and the plans for the City of Rochester's first nature center. And it's hard to overstate the enthusiasm on display from those who have been leading this transformation. The vision for the center includes an interior that is open to the public with a classroom space, a kitchen space, the ability for groups to rent it out. And Frederick Law Olmsted said in the late 1800s that parks should be easily accessible to the public, that parks should be connected to natural features like a river, like gorges. The people leading this project believe that it does fit into Olmsted's vision, and let's talk about that this hour with our guests. Let me welcome them now. Bill Collins is president of the Maplewood Neighborhood Association. Bill, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Evan.
Also with us is Sarah Scott, Director of Programs and Park Stewardship in the Department of Recreation and Human Services for the City of Rochester. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to Kira Stevenson, who is a nature-based learning coach for the Rochester City School District. Welcome back to the program here.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And Amanda Little is an environmental educator for the City of Rochester. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So a lot of different directions we can go, and I'm going to start with Sarah here. So can you give the public, the listening public, a chance to really understand the City of Rochester's first nature center? If this is a done deal, when's it going to be? Everybody wants to know when it's happening. Take us through
100%. Yep, this is absolutely a done deal. So this work actually came out of some work the city started back in 2018 with cities connecting children to nature. So one of the goals of that initiative was to establish the first urban nature center in the city. And the site that was selected was in Maplewood Park, as you mentioned, the old training facility. This work is well on its way. We've already started design. We've had some public input meetings. Construction should begin in late fall 2024, and completion would be in late 2025. So we are well on our way to getting community input. We have preliminary designs. The city's actually gone out to bid on folks that could actually start to construct this facility. We've been working with EDR and architecture on some really cutting edge designs to take what is now, you could definitely drive by this building and not even notice it.
I think that's probably right.
To a space that really embraces, like you said, the Olmsted vision for this space and opens the building up to the park and the park up to the building.
So we're going to be sitting here 2 years from today, and it's going to be open, it's going to be programmed, there's going to be all kinds of cool things happening.
Yes, and as you say that, my heart drops in my chest, but yes.
Why is that? Because there's a lot of work between now and then?
It's a lot of work. I mean, it's very exciting work, and we have a lot of great partners at the table and a lot of great staff working on it, and I'm confident of what we can accomplish. But again, it's the first of its kind. We have some great examples to look to, but we'll be up and running. We'll have programming available to the community so we can actually come back and talk with you about all the great stuff we're doing.
Do we have an overall price tag, and is the money set aside? The money is there.
I don't have the exact where we are with the total cost, but absolutely the Mayor Evans says it's a priority.
He said so right here on the show, so now it's official.
It's official. So the money has been approved by council. As I mentioned, we went out to bid on a construction. So that money is encumbered, ready to go. It's happening. This is real.
Amanda, how do you think about this project? Like, what excites you the most?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's going to be an awesome tool to help increase access to nature for kids and kind of meeting them where they're at. We're really hoping to have a robust partnership with the RCSD and hoping to get some classes out there and have some excited teachers that are willing to use the space with their kids. And I'm really looking forward to providing programming that can be in addition to my programs that I run in the R centers, but just having that kind of home base for activities surrounded around the Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. And just looking forward to having more kids be able to access the park, Maplewood Park, and have additional opportunities for kids in school time, in addition to what we're already doing in out of school time.
We're going to come back to that. You might have just heard Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights, and we are going to talk about that. I think that's important, especially in the context here of understanding accessibility and opportunity for everyone. Kira, what excites you most about this Nature Center?
I think overall is just the growth of nature-based learning, and it is becoming something that is transformative within our community. It's having an incredible impact on the students that we're working with at School 12. We're going into year three of nature-based learning embedded within one of our city schools, and it's growing from there. We have more principals reaching out. We have the support of the school district. I'm part of the team for the Nature Everywhere through the Children Outdoor, Children and Nature Network. And so to me it is, this is an opportunity to impact more of our 40,000 youth that are in the city of Rochester that drives what we do. And these children have a right to access nature. We have one of the most beautiful geologic and biologic cities, you know, and getting people to appreciate that and connect with some other natural being, I think is the sky's the limit with what the impact can have on our community.
Let me just follow up with Kira before I turn to Bill on one point there, though. When you talk about, 40,000 kids? And I think that's the number you use?
That's a rough number of how many youth, and don't ask me the ages, but youth within the city of Rochester.
Kids.
Right.
Can you build something like this and be confident that they will come, or that they will be encouraged to go, that they will be, there will be facilitated transportation, that they will get there, that it will not just be a center that excludes?
I think when we work with the community partners that we are already working with, and doing it as a collective group, and it becomes part of the culture within our schools and our neighborhoods, then yes, I think so. Is it necessarily the location for everybody? Maybe not, but that only means that there's growth then for more locations or programming that can be at other areas within our city.
Well, Bill, as the president of the Maplewood Neighborhood Association here, take me through how you have responded to the proposal here and then what your vision for this is.
Well, we've been very excited about the center. I don't know if you're aware of the facilities, the recreation centers in Rochester, but the closest recreation center to Maplewood right now is down in Edgerton, like a couple miles away. Maplewood and Charlotte have no recreation centers. And so we've been without one for a while. There used to be one at LaGrange that was closed. There used to be a part-time one at School 7 that was closed. So we are really excited about having recreation opportunities available for our residents. The children in the Maplewood neighborhood. It's an extremely diverse neighborhood. There's lots of refugee children, lots of children of color and low income, and also middle income children. It's a very diverse neighborhood. So we want them to be able to use this recreation center as much as they can. We want to make sure, though, that they can get there too, right? So it's a beautiful location right on the edge of the gorge, but it's also kind of cut off from the rest of the neighborhood by Lake Avenue and 104. We want to make sure that it's going to be easy for kids to get there by means other than by car, right, or by school bus. Hopefully, we want them to be able to walk there, to ride their bike there, to get there easily without necessarily having to be transported there. And as our climate goals become more and more important, the city is going to want them to get there by means other than car or bus too. So.
Okay. And Sarah, are they going to be able to get there? Is this going to be accessible for everyone?
Yeah. So I definitely want to mention a couple things related to the project. And Bill and I also live in Maplewood, so he is my fearless leader as the Maplewood Neighborhood Association president, and also a considered dear friend. Yes, 100%. So as the mayor announced the Project Zero plan, looking at improved bike lanes and accessibility, improved bus routes, There's also a partner project happening at the same time. So a portion of the Genesee River Trail actually goes through the project location. And there's some plans to look at doing some improvements along the section of the trail from about the Driving Park Bridge north towards Kodak. So yes, 100% we'll have bike facilities there. I just want to be clear too that this is a neighborhood park and it will remain a neighborhood park. It'll be accessible to the neighborhood. It'll be accessible to the community. As Bill mentioned, you know, we definitely see this as an improvement and a recreational asset in the city. So there'll be park improvements. We are doing a complete renovation of the playground there to be more in theme with the nature center, as well as we're doing a shade structure there as part of our climate resiliency plan. So there's lots of improvements and lots of attention focused on this location to encourage not only the nature-based learning component, but also to encourage folks to come and utilize the park, which it's a well-utilized space, but making it more bike-friendly, walk-friendly. We will have buses coming, hopefully, from RCSD and Charter and other schools and, you know, homeschool groups and whatnot. But
let me just ask you something related to this that's sort of tangential, but I think it's not. You mentioned the Vision Zero, the city. And if listeners aren't familiar, we had a conversation recently. The city of Rochester is one of dozens of American communities that are now part of the Vision Zero initiative, and the vision being zero traffic fatalities or zero pedestrian fatalities. That's pretty aggressive when Lake Avenue still exists. I mean, I live in Shalott. I mean, I drive on Lake Avenue every day. And one of the big prongs that got the most feedback when this conversation happened, and we talked about a lot of different stuff, but everybody wanted to talk about speed limits. And most people were like, yeah, lower the speed limits. That's fine. You should do that. And then some people were like, how dare you? How dare you lower the speed limits? Like, I need to get to work. There are cultural changes that have to happen if a city is going to actually live a stated value of being truly more walkable, truly, you know, sort of concerned about climate and doing something about it, accessible for everybody. And it is not necessarily going to suit the people who just want to drive their car everywhere they go. And I've been that guy. Like, I'm not, like, you know, sneering at people. Like, I'm sure I've been that guy. But I feel like it's all connected in some ways here. Sarah, do you feel like whether it's Vision Zero, the Nature Center, I mean, is it all of a piece here that of a bigger puzzle that you see?
Absolutely. You know, as you're talking about that, I neglected to mention that there are two progressive elements to the Nature Center. So we also received a grant to install solar panels on the facility, and there's also geothermal. So the building, again, I'm not a technical expert. This would be my colleagues in DES, but to be a net zero facility. So having those as examples of the city's commitment to, you know, being progressive in terms of our climate policies. Absolutely. And I think it's also almost a feedback loop. Like, some of these things are, we have to learn this new way of being, and then through the nature-based learning and through what we can do at the Nature Center, through what we can show youth that are coming, you know, and then the goal of this is not just to have kids come for a once and done. This is to have a continuing connection with this nature-based curriculum and, you know, feed that into opportunities for youth to have jobs that they're actually educating their peers. And, you know, we can talk about some of that that's already happening. You know, this is an ethos that they're being exposed to, that they learn. So I think that all of these things, you know, I also live off of Lake Avenue, and I think it's going to take time for people to adjust, but I don't think that is an impossibility.
Bill?
You know, I'm also in Reconnect Rochester. And so we've been involved with Vision Zero for a while. To me, it makes most sense to make sure that the public knows that the reasons that we're putting these lower speed limits into effect, that we're doing automated traffic enforcement, is to protect the kids. Right? We want the kids to be safe. You know, if you look at other cities that have done this kind of thing, the first places they put these things are around school zones and parks and places where kids should be able to be safe to go. Right? And so, to me, the overriding message should be slow down to make things safe for kids. Like, who can argue with that? Right? I mean, the kids have to be safe. They have to be safe to play near the streets. They have to be safe to get to and from school and from the parks.
Well, and Bill, I wonder if by starting with school speed zones, which of course I get and probably are inevitable, but the fact that those have to exist might convince people, well, I'm not in a school zone, so I can put the pedal down here, as opposed to I'm in a city with thousands of kids, thousands of people, and I'm going to live with getting there 2 minutes later. I've had to train myself to think that way. But are you confident that the culture can change?
You know, typically that's where they've started. You know, they've started with school zones to get people used to the automated enforcement, the lower limits, and then they expand it to then to kind of moving outwards to the parks, to the routes to and from schools, to the commercial corridors where you want pedestrians to be safe. So once you get people used to the lower speed limit, get used to, you know, traffic control, automated traffic control devices, you know, then the culture begins to change.
Kira, do you think that this is all interconnected here? Do you see everything from the Nature Center to everything else we've been talking about is kind of woven together?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's what we're seeing at School 12 is the culture shift within our community and our school as it's becoming a nature-based learning school. And we've seen from students that are fearful of going outside or feel fearful of other natural beings to now they're becoming protectors. Or they're becoming explorers, and they're becoming passionate about whether it's cool fungus or fallen over trees or ladybugs. And so if we can see a culture shift within a school in just 2 years, and it's growing. We have our first graduate of School 12 is now an intern for Rochester Ecology Partners. And we have students that are saying, okay, where's the next nature-based learning school? And you know, right now I'm like, you're on the forefront, so it's coming. And so when we see empathy growing with students and we see inquiry growing naturally within students and our teachers, you know, and the joy that they're finding with spending time in nature and the value of connecting to our natural spaces, that connection is what is going to drive and change behavior. And that behavior and those decision makings down the road are what is going to ultimately hopefully change a community. And so if we can see it with 600, 800 students at one school in 2 years, I am fully, you know, I mean, you mentioned how passionate I am about this. Yeah. You know, I see it on a daily impact, the impact that this nature-based learning is having on students has a greater impact than anything I think I have done besides maybe raising my own children and my marriage.
If you're just joining us here, we're having a conversation that starts with the plan for the Maplewood Nature Center that is happening. It is in motion. My colleague Gina Finelli reported on it a couple of years ago, and 2 years later, here in 2024, the money is set aside, the plans are being made, construction will start in the fall, with a plan of opening in 2026 or really completing at the end of 2025. So it is an aggressive timeline, but everyone is on board. And you heard Mayor Malik Evans talk about it on this program recently. We're talking this hour to Kira Stevenson, a nature-based learning coach for the Rochester City School District, and Bill Collins, president of the Maplewood Neighborhood Association. And joining us from the city of Rochester, Amanda Little is an environmental educator, and Sarah Scott, director of programs and park stewardship in the Department of Recreation and Human Services. Let me ask Sarah and Amanda, expanding on this theme of a city that really is for everyone, there is something that we've heard a couple times this hour, which is the Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. And can I ask both of you to kind of tell listeners a little bit more about what that is and why that is there? I see a smile on Amanda's face. You want to start?
Sure. So the Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights started as a strategy as part of the initiative with the Children in Nature Network as part of the second strategy with them. So the first strategy was increasing out-of-school environmental programming. The second strategy is developing a Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. And the third strategy, as Sarah mentioned, was opening the Nature Center. So our Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights was signed into city legislature in 2021 with help from and input from the community groups, our partners, and also youth groups. So we were able to kind of have our mayor advisory council, our youth voice one vision, and urban ecologists with the Seneca Park Zoo reach out to the community and see what the community values and what they think is important for kids to experience by the time they reach 18. So through that process, we were able to determine 12 rights that everyone agreed, including the city, that all kids in Rochester should have right to experience and should experience as part of their recreation time, their school time, and just have those experiences in nature. And so we're really excited that we've been really mobilizing on this. COBOR is what we call it, and I get to do a lot of programming around it in the R centers. So just this morning we were out kayaking on the Genesee River with Jackson R Center. So that's one of my favorite things to do with the kids, because we're connecting back to the Genesee River, right? So it's a huge part of Rochester and the history of the city. So to get the kids back to that, to our roots, kind of, in a way, is really special. And a lot of times it's the first time that kids are on a boat or around the water.
I was wondering, how many of the kids in the kayak are doing that for the first time?
Oh, almost all of them. So, you know, to be able to give them that experience, just, you know, attending the wreck, they get to do this. So they'll be really scared when they first start, but then by the end, they're super excited. And they're like, oh, when are we going to come back? Right. So it's building those connections with nature. So over time, they can choose to protect it and to make choices that support nature and, you know, climate resilience and everything that goes along with that.
I'm not going to quiz you on all 12 tenets of the children's
sure.
movement, but can you share a couple that may stand out that you feel are central to this mission?
Yeah. So just as I was mentioning, the play in clean rivers and lakes is one of them that we kind of do with the kayaking. And then also we've had a partnership with Cornhill Navigation where we take the kids on the rivery boat on the Genesee River, which has been really, really fun to see the kids kind of engaged in science aboard, you know, a little cruise ship. So that's been a lot of fun. And then some of the other ones that are, you know, pretty simple to accomplish in some ways, play in the snow. You know, the kids love doing that. We just go out for an hour in after school time and just kind of let them, you know, play around. And we got some sleds, so we'll be checking that out this winter. And some of the other ones are learn to swim, learn to ride a bike. And one of my favorites is explore nature in neighborhoods, which I really enjoy doing at the rec centers, because you might not always think that there's a ton of nature around you, but helping kids to connect with nature that's really in their backyard is really, I think, essential to this mission.
Sarah, do you want to add?
Yeah, Amanda just did a great job. So when we first came up, I mean, this was an idea that was, you know, happening across the nation, and so we were able to look to a lot of sister cities to get ideas. And you know, I think the piece that was unique about ours was the youth component. So Kira did a lot of work getting, you know, input from school-age kids. Chris Woodmire at the time was overseeing the urban ecologist and partnered with our Youth Voice One Vision group to get the teen input and, you know, really get some R-Center participants. What came out of it, too, was this COBOR that now we thought, okay, this needs to frame the programming that we're doing through the environmental education work that we're doing within rec centers. And so then Amanda and Stephanie, who's another one of our staff, kind of took that, and all of our programming now has this lens of how are we helping to achieve one of these rights. And that's, earlier Kira mentioned the Nature Everywhere work that we're doing, and that's in partnership with the city, the school district. I mentioned the Rochester Ecology Partners. You know, talking about how do we take this idea of youth having a right to access and learn about nature in the city and have it influence what we're doing in every school, whether it's city school, charter, others have brought up homeschooling, you know, even and then in out-of-school time. How do we have this COBOR be a lens through which we're shaping the programming that we're trying to provide to youth in the city? And then I want to say one thing, too, that I think is an important part of that is not just having it, you know, having this lead to not just the change that we talked about in terms of attitudes towards nature or, you know, attitudes towards some of the things that Bill was mentioning in terms of climate, but also workforce opportunities. So, you know, getting kids their first job, talking about if you're interested in this stuff, what are some of the possibilities out there for things you could do? Or, you know, how can we connect you with professionals in the city or within the city government that are doing this work? So whether that's forestry or, you know, the Water Bureau, giving kids more input and exposure to those opportunities. And I know that, you know, the Ecology Partners are doing that. I think that the Land Trust has done that. Taproot Collective has opportunities through the city's soup program to offer youth jobs that kind of expose them to some of these concepts as well. So the COBOR really kind of grew in a way.
COBOR, Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. That's the
city loves acronyms.
That's the shorthand. Kira, how do you feel about COBOR?
I can piggyback on what Sarah has been saying, is that it's really, we have teachers at each grade level this summer working on nature-based learning lesson plans tied to the curriculum. And as a guide, it is really looking at what can we do as educators within a system, you know, a public school system, to support the COBOR. And really talking to the students, too, about you have this right, you know, that you get to and have the right to swim and enjoy clean waters. You have a right to be able to have the opportunity to view the stars. And obviously one of the big parts of the COBOR, one of them is learn how to take care of the planet and discover wildlife. And our schools have the opportunity to support that. So, you know, along with the community partners, I think that it provides kind of a guide as well for nature-based learning. When I talk about nature-based learning, the pillars that I always come back to are academic growth, wellness, and that's the physical and the social emotional wellness of a child, and then community building. And that community building is not just with one another, but it's also within our natural community. And so using that COBOR too to come up with action plans to meet our goals as nature-based learning within the school.
Bill, you feel like in at least in your neighborhood, Bill's the president of the Maplewood Neighborhood Association. In the summer, I mean, do you see kids using the park? Are you in the park quite a bit yourself?
I go through the park almost every day when I go into work. Not this part, the lower part, but it's the park. Maplewood Park is definitely well utilized. You know, some parts more than others, at certain times more than others. You know, Lake Avenue is a problem, frankly. You know, it acts as a moat to keep people away from Maplewood Park because people feel it's dangerous. You know, I know that's addressed in the Vision Zero program going forward to try to make that less of a barrier to people trying to get to the park. You know, really, I'm excited about the one aspect of this in the sense that so many people in Rochester, especially kids, don't even see the river, you know, especially south north of downtown. It's invisible. You know, you can hardly get to see it unless you go over a bridge and happen to try to crane your neck to look over. But it's the river is like one of our most important natural resources in the city. It's a spectacular, especially like the lower falls, you know, which feeds into the gorge. It's a spectacular sight. It's a unique ecosystem, you know, the lower river feeding into the lake. I know the zoo has done a lot of programs already introducing sturgeon and educating the public about the ecosystem there. To me, making this river more visible to the kids in Rochester, showing them their birthright, is an extremely important portion of this project.
It's interesting you say that Lake Ave acts as kind of a moat, because it's similar language to what we've heard in describing things like the Interloop. And of course, the Interloop, a sunken highway that literally did divide communities, and sometimes intentionally so, whether in our community or elsewhere. You know, some might say, well, Bill, you know, Lake Avenue is not sunken. You know, you can cross it. But I think part of what I'm hearing you say is when you have automobile thoroughfares that are not considered, or that have a reputation for being unsafe, that cars are routinely going over posted speed limits, that you see routine accidents and issues on, to say nothing of ATVs or other things, and it will keep people on one side or the other, and people will make their sort of their own little communities on one side or the other without having to regularly pass it, because it's not viewed as safe. It's not something that people want to do, and it, even subconsciously, it's like, well, I'm on the west side of Lake Avenue. I'm not going across it. I'm not going to the east side. Is that kind of where your mind is?
Yeah, or it also limits people attending a certain place on one side to just drivers, right? The only way they feel safe is to get there is to drive, and that's not right. There's a lot of people in the city that don't have cars,
right?
Especially in my neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely. Listeners, if you want to weigh in on any of this, by the way, I should mention, you can call the programs toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or email the program connections@WXXI.org. Kira, you want to weigh in on that last part, too?
Yes, I just wanted to say, too, that we did, through Rochester Ecology Partners, every fourth grader at School 12 is doing a field study along Maplewood Park and into the Lower Falls. And so it is that exploration and learning about place, right? And getting the students to walk the trails, go down by the Lower Falls, that, again, will build that community of this is a place I can go and I have access to and I have the right to be here.
Well, I would love to hear what listeners think about all of this. It's an ambitious plan for the city of Rochester. That is the reason we're here. The first nature center in the city of Rochester. It's the Maplewood Nature Center that is coming your way. What's the exact location for people who haven't seen where the building is, Sarah?
I believe the address is 107 Bridgeview.
It's on Bridgeview. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's a really dazzling building now that has housed police motorcycles. That is very nice.
And the training.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But as our guests have said, you might have passed it and never thought of it because why would you? Well, now you will. How much bigger is that building? Is it going to be bigger? Is it going to change?
The building itself, the actual footprint of the building is not going to change much, but the entire inside and sort of aesthetic and feel is... I mean, architecture is phenomenal, very visionary in terms of the design, and has been great to work with and really gets the idea of wanting to have a facility that fits. And, you know, you mentioned the Olmsted legacy of this space, and just this is one of our premier parks, or should be considered one of our premier parks. And so having a facility that really fits into the landscape and meets the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish, you know, and ideally we'll have kids inside and out, you know.
I think one whole wall of that opens up with garage doors.
The back of the facility.
To access the outdoors.
Actually oversees the pond that's there, and so that will be much more visible. And I wanted to touch on a point, too, just in terms of Kira's, you know, mentioned this network. So we definitely have a lot of partners at the table. We have the RCSD at the table. And I think that also individual relationships with schools, so... You know, Kira is doing amazing work at her school, and she has a network of schools. We've mentioned the ecology partners and the schools that they're working with. We've also had conversations with Common Ground Health and some of the schools that their Healthy Kids Network are in touch with. You know, and then I just have to shout out our commissioner, Commissioner Green, who previously worked with the district, has a lot of connections. And so principal by principal, you know, folks are jazzed about this idea of nature-based learning. They're excited about having this facility. They're excited about how can they connect their school to some of these ideas. So I think that there's a movement started, but also brewing and growing. I think that, you know, there's been some setbacks with the RCSD, but I do think there's a lot of opportunity because at those times of big change, some new fresh ideas could take hold. And so we've done outreach to some of the schools in the area. You know, school 7's there, school 42 is not that far, 50 is across the river, 8, you know. Seeing this as a space that we could try to connect more youth to the environment. And if teachers are excited about the idea but not comfortable, see, because that's the thing that's special about Kira. She's excited and she's comfortable. You know, we have staff. We have experts who can help, you know, whether it's through what the work that Amanda's doing or other partners or the work that, you know, the ecology partners are doing. We just need principals and, you know, chief of schools and teachers who are willing. Like you said, we need to get kids to the space, not just a one and done field trip, but an ongoing connection with nature is the hope.
Well, I want to talk to Amanda and Kira a little bit more about the education that you do in your various spheres. And there's been something that's in my mind kind of unsaid here, and I'm just going to say it clunkily. So sorry, it's going to be coming out very clumsily. But I think, at least unspoken so far in my mind, has been this idea that in our society, I grew up in like the Pittsford of Cleveland, and there was plenty of, I used to walk through woods to get to school. And I was that, you know, that cliched kid who would go look for crayfish in the creek during the summer days and come back at dinner time. And I was around nature all the time. And I went to summer camps on Lake Chautauqua, YMCA camps. I was a counselor. I was connected to it. But I was also like middle, upper middle class. It was pretty easy to be connected to it. And we have this ugly history in this country of not only economic dispossession, but then where we have sort of pushed people, the communities that we've created for people who are impoverished, often communities of color who have been dispossessed, are often communities that don't have a lot of trees, don't have a lot of nature, don't have schools that are very connected to nature. And I wonder if some of this is an intentional corrective of that. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, or maybe, Kira, what do you think?
No, you're exactly right. And I always come back to this word with my students, that they're becoming nature ambassadors. And this is, it's providing time and space and an entry point that is comfortable with somebody like me who is passionate, to break down all of the barriers that have been put in place to prevent human beings from creating a beautiful relationship with the other natural beings on this planet. And the way I look at it is that if we don't do this, we're not going to be part of this planet. Definitely not the way we know it right now, you know. And everything that I know, this is what's good for kids, this is what's good for a community. And, you know, Amanda and I have worked together a lot. And so it is also utilizing our partnerships and doing this as a whole. I had my students gave Amanda feedback on even what color the walls students wanted to see within the Nature Center. What the trash cans should look like. And what happens to children when they're heard, you know, and they have incredible ideas. So I part of this work is absolutely imperative if we are going to change some of the, you talk about, it's like environmental segregation, right? In terms of what has been built so that people do not have access.
Well, you're in year three, you said. Year three of nature-based learning at school 12.
Yes.
What is a typical, is there a typical week? Like, can you just paint a little picture for listeners about what it is that you're doing?
Watering plants, feeding our my classroom is a nature center within the building. So we have two tortoise, a snake, and various insects. I get multiple hugs because a lot of the younger kids, I'm known as the nature lady. And if they see me, I have to be careful because if I enter a classroom, they're like, oh, we're getting our coats on, we're going outside. So a typical day is nonstop. And it is a matter of doing laundry for cleaning, wet gloves and hats to packing up a wagon to create an outdoor classroom to, shifting and adjusting schedules because there's a fire drill or things like that, and getting as many kids outside as possible.
You want to describe what your work typically entails?
Sure. So
Amanda, by the way, is an environmental educator at the City of Rochester.
So this summer is the summertime is especially fun because most of our art centers have gardens. So we are always out in the garden with the kids. They've been really excited about the fruit trees that are, you know, in fully ripe. And every time I'm there, they're like, oh, Miss Amanda, let's go out and pick some fruit. So they're really enjoying the summertime and being outdoors in the garden. And, you know, they love the fruit and everything, but then they're also starting to learn that, okay, we actually have to take care of the land, right? So we have to water it and we have to weed it. And so we're kind of building those relationships. And so it's really been special to have access to those gardens at our sites. And in addition, we get to do all these fun field trips in the summertime. And kids just sign up with me and they get to come along. So we've been, we actually went out to the Equa Center in Mendon, and the kids got to have some one-on-one time with the horses, and they also do a lot of large-scale farming out there, so the kids got to see what that looks like in person. And so my work kind of can span going out, you know, 20-30 minutes from the city, but it also is largely based in the city at the rec centers, like in the gardens and just taking the kids out and looking at what types of trees are at the rec centers, you know, comparing deciduous trees and pine trees and evergreens and just kind of getting them to know what's out there, right? Because you can't really be interested in something that you don't know about. So my goal is to just get the kids excited about being outside. You know, part of our work with the COBOR was identifying barriers to spending time outdoors. And a lot of it was, I don't have time, or I'm scared of bugs, which is a huge one. So that one is really a challenge for us to kind of break down those walls. And for me, the garden is a great tool to be able to teach the kids that, you know, the bugs like have a purpose.
Not the wasps.
Luckily we don't have to, we have mostly bumblebees, which is great.
Somebody's going to email me the purpose of wasps.
Yeah.
And then it's not just to antagonize, I guess, but.
Right. So, but I've seen a change in the kids. They're excited to go out and.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. It's been really
great. Can you talk a little bit about the Little Trap project too? Cause I think like the sort of like researching.
Yeah, so we have a partnership with the Rochester Institute of Technology, and we've installed Litta traps at two of our.
What kind of traps?
They're called Litta traps.
Litta.
It's like trademarked.
Litter. Litter, but Litta with an A.
Yeah, Litta traps. It's actually trademarked as that. So they are little, basically nets that go inside catch basins, and they collect plastic. And RIT actually studies the pieces of plastic that they get out of it. And the kids have been helping to sort, actually, the plastic pieces inside the litter traps themselves. And they've been, you know, that data is actually used by RIT.
Yeah.
So they're starting to see, okay, you know, maybe this could be something that I do when I get older. We actually took a bunch of the kids to the RIT lab and showed them where the work is done. And they really enjoyed seeing the college. And they're like, oh, I want to come here. And, you know, that's part of our goal. And actually, we just had a cleanup at Ryan R. Center, and we had about 30 kids, and they picked up 1,500 pieces of individual plastic during, a couple hours span.
Yeah.
So we have great partnerships that really are driving the work.
And that work is transferring over to School 12.
Yep.
We're
going
to be doing this.
Exactly.
Do you want to weigh in on this too, Bill?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention, getting back to your original question about kind of like the environmental segregation, one thing that I think is most important about this program is getting kids used to being outside and getting comfortable with them being outside, because we're seeing so much data now from studies as to the importance of being outside for kids' health. As far as their cardiovascular health, their eye health, their neural health, about how this affects their later earnings in life. If they're outside more, the effects of kids being outside is truly huge. And we want all kids to be able to take advantage of that, not just kids in the suburbs, right?
Absolutely. Let me get some feedback from listeners. Samantha in Dansville is on the phone. Hello, Samantha. Go ahead.
Hi. First, I want to thank your guests very much for what they're doing. It's making me cry.
Yeah, hear, hear.
The impact that you're having, it's just wonderful. So thank you so much for that. I believe that, bridging the gaps between urban and natural world is just absolutely critical for our survival, and what you're doing is absolutely amazing. My questions for you is, you said School 12. I'm not familiar, so I'm wondering what age group you're working with. I might have missed that in the beginning, sorry. And if you plan on doing any sort of urban vegetable gardening or any sort of things like that, or maybe apiaries growing, peas or anything like that, to bring that to the table, as well as the natural peas. And if you have any partnerships with any of the indigenous people of our land that we're so lucky to occupy here.
Samantha, hang there for one second. I'm going to turn it over first to Kira Stevenson, who's a nature-based learning coach for the Rochester City School District. Go ahead.
So School 12 is Anna Murray Douglas Academy. It is located just across from Highland Hospital and adjacent to Highland Park. And the last 2 years that I've been there, it's been pre-K through eighth grade. The city has redistricted and moved seventh and eighth graders, not all schools, but a lot of we're going to have the middle school model. So this coming year, it will be pre-K through sixth grade. And through Rochester Ecology Partners, we have been doing nature-based learning at some of the high schools, and the principals have been reaching out through various schools of different age groups wanting to continue this work. In terms of gardening, within our school, I have five tower gardens. So we've been growing tomatoes and peppers and a various amount of herbs and greens. And then what's awesome about School 12 is some of our schools are tied to a campus. So we have Frederick Douglass, Rec Center, and Library within our all kind of in one building. And adjacent to the Rec Center is a huge community garden. So our students take advantage of that from the first week of school, actually year round, really. And that's a huge partnership with the Rec Center, because I cannot single-handedly do my job and manage a big garden like that. And I know there was other questions, but
let's sort of jump back in there. Go ahead, Samantha.
Just wondering if you're partnering with any of the native peoples that of the land that we occupy, and how that might impact your work at all.
Yes, absolutely. So Gunanagan has is part of the they're part of a partnership too with New York State Parks and Environmental Educators. So we had a fifth grade class this year pilot a program during Blackbirders Week, which is usually the week after Memorial Day. And we've also had a white pine tree ceremony planting, and really working on growing how we are connected and the value of our indigenous lands, and what that means to now utilize work and play and be with on those lands. So yes.
Samantha, thank you for that phone call, and I know our guests appreciate the kind words, and I just want to echo that. Their work is vital in this community. Chris in Hamlin writes to say, just wondering more about the Olmsteads. Father and son planned for an emerald necklace around Rochester. It was a U-shaped series of greenways and parks that started at what is now Mount Reed and Latta, included Genesee Park Boulevard, parts of Elmwood Avenue, Mount Hope Avenue, and St. Paul. It also included South Park, Genesee Valley Park, and North Park, which was Maplewood and Seneca Parks. That's from Chris and Hamlin. It makes me wonder, how much of what currently exists is the full Olmsted version? Did we get everything that was planned? I don't know. No?
No, and it's unfortunate. Joanne Beck is a Maplewood resident. She also is the former landscape architect for the city of Rochester. She's also the president of the Olmsted Parks Committee, and she wasn't able to join us. She would love this question. I will do poorly in answering it, but I'll try my best. So there is a series of Olmsted parks by both the eldest and also related firms, and that includes some of the bigger parks that you mentioned, Genesee Valley Park, Maplewood Park. But there's also street malls designed by Olmsted, Jones Square Park, you know, smaller neighborhood parks. So we are blessed with an abundance of Olmsted-designed or Olmsted-inspired firms that have that legacy of the vision of what Olmsted was. I can't speak to whether or not that emerald necklace was ever completed. Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, there's been a lot of advocacy around maintaining Olmsted spaces. There's a lot of really strong regulations around park and park alienation. Obviously, if you've been at Genesee Valley Park or Maplewood Park, there's been some intrusions, 390 and, you know, the Veterans Bridge. And so Maplewood Park that exists now is not the full extent of the original park, but the beauty of this project is that through reclaiming this space as a nature space, as a park for the people, we want to kind of return to some of that vision of reclaiming some of the parking to be park, you know, renaturalizing the pond area. So kind of coming back to that vision of what Olmsted wanted. And I'll say this too, you know, I don't think that necessarily some of the Olmsted vision was as progressive as we might want for today, but as far as like the idea of parks for people, parks for recreation, parks for, you know, Kira mentioned physical health, mental health, you know, social building community parks for places where people can get away from the grind of the city and find peace. I think there was a sense of that value, and now, you know, a sense of that value for every member of our community.
Mm-hmm. Chris, thank you for that email. I'll just say I've been to Boston one time in my life. I was struck doing a lot of walking in Boston, how it didn't feel like there was one big central park, but then it was pavement everywhere. There was a lot of green interspersed. And it felt like you didn't have to go too far before you'd find some kind of green. And I do feel like that about Rochester. I feel like we have a really beautiful community, and we need to make sure it is accessible to everyone.
I just want to say onto that point, yep. So actually, another initiative that the city undertook a while back with community partners was this 10-minute walk to parks initiative.
Yeah.
And that was an initiative through the Trust for Public Land and the Urban Land Institute. And surprisingly, based on data, mapping data, 89% of city residents live within a 10-minute walk to a park or green space. Then you start to talk about, and we mentioned this earlier, but what is the safety in accessing that space, whether it's traffic safety or...
Do you have to cross a Lake Avenue, et cetera?
Or elements that are happening in the community. Right. And then also, what kind of programming are you finding when you get to that space, and how well-maintained is that? And I think those are all things that, you know, the city, the current administration, and certainly my colleagues in DES and DRIES are trying to address as far as well-maintained parks with great programming for youth and families.
Hey, Mike Bowler, your friend, writes to say, I'm excited to keep supporting all of this work and keep connecting the St. John Fisher University students to support it as well. Your guests are all superstars. Well, thank you, Mike. That is really great. We're going to come back year and a half, and we're going to talk about the finished Maplewood Nature Center. And our guests are all going to come back here. The same panel of four is going to tell you what the plan is on opening day and all of the programming that is to come. But in the meantime, the cityofrochester.gov's website's got more information. And I want to thank our guests joining us from the city, Amanda Little, Sarah Scott. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here. Bill Collins, president of the Maplewood Neighborhood Association. Thank you. Kira Stevenson, who's a nature-based learning coach. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From all of us at Connections, get outside if you can. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.